Thank you for joining us for this episode of Take Notice, Amplifying Black Stories. I am your host, Allison Preisinger-Higgins. Take Notice, Amplifying Black Stories is a podcast exploring society, culture, and current events through conversation. We aspire to create an open, respectful, and equitable space where guests may feel free to share their truth and lived experiences. Our core values are rooted in community, connection, and personal development. Stories help us learn, relate, and grow. We are here to listen, to take notice. Thank you for being with us. I would like to show gratitude to the traditional ancestral land of the Puyallup people, past and present, on which this episode was created. I encourage listeners to research the land on which you live and are listening right now. Recognizing this is just the beginning. The more you explore, challenge, and learn, the more questions may arise, but this is how we grow and connect. On this episode of Take Notice, Amplifying Black Stories, we welcome Mari Griffin. Mari and I met up for this interview at the Tacoma Armory in Tacoma, Washington, in the ACE offices. And that's actually where we met as well. We are both a part of the ACE, the Accelerating Creative Enterprises program that happened through the Tacoma Armory earlier this year. So it was wonderful to connect with Mari in this way and hear more of her story and her background and what she's excited for coming up in her future. Before I say anything else, I want to be sure to apologize profusely for the technical issues that we had during recording. You'll hear it in some of the recording, unfortunately. I don't know, everything that could have gone wrong kind of did. And so I was trying to figure it out as we went, and I don't know what the deal was. So apologies for the kind of distracting audio quality at times. Hopefully you'll still be able to focus on Mari's story. Mari is the founder of the Black Night Market, located in Tacoma, Washington, at least for now. She's a Tacoma native and a local artist, community worker, mentor, and business owner. Her work is inspired by the lack of economic opportunities and representation for Black-owned businesses. And that's what inspired her to create the Black Night Market, which you'll get to hear about that origin story a little bit more in our conversation. Black Night Market is like one big family gathering where people come together to network, celebrate, rejoice, and support Black culture and community. Mari is an artist with a love for artistry and sharing that love with community, and it shows through the events that she produces. And I've been to a couple of them, and it's so true. They're very enjoyable, they're lovely, they're community-oriented, and there's so much cool artistry to see and be a part of at these events. So thank you, Mari, for joining us, and thank you all for listening. Please enjoy this episode with Mari Griffin. Mari, thank you for joining me on Take Notice at ACE in the Tacoma Armory where we met. I'm so excited to chat with you. So how are you today? How are you this week, this summer?
I am well. Good. I'm blessed. I'm happy that we have some sunshine.
A lot of it. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Yeah. I did see that the weather changed. There's going to be rain coming up, like a little bit. Mm. I think that might be good for a second, and then back to the summer.
Mm. Yeah.
So dry.
Maybe give us like a chill out.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a little rest. Yeah. Because it's such a weird summer the past couple summers. Mm. For here. Did you grow up around here, or where did you grow up?
Born and raised in Tacoma, Washington.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
I used to live on Hilltop. I lived on Hilltop for like 12 years.
When you were growing up or
from about 15 all the way until 26.
Oh, okay. Nice. Awesome. And then you moved to, is that when you moved to Spanaway or?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I moved to Spanaway.
So growing up in Tacoma, who were you surrounded by growing up?
My mom, my twin sister, friends from high school.
What did your mom do when you were growing up?
She worked at she was a part of a nonprofit organization called WE, where they helped women find employment and education and childcare.
Oh, awesome. And that was based in Tacoma? Is it still around? Or?
No, I don't think it's still around, but okay. It was based in Tacoma.
Okay, awesome. So that was probably it. And did she do that throughout your childhood? Or
She worked there for, I think, like 16, 17 years.
Oh, wow. Nice. Yeah. What did she transition to after that?
Now she owns a business.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm.
She owns a t-shirt business where she makes custom shirts.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Awesome. Also in Tacoma? Or
yeah, she's in Tacoma.
Oh, cool. Is she a part of the market or no?
Yes. Her business name is Roe, R-O-E, the T-shirt guru.
That's your mom. Mm-hmm. I saw her at the first night market that I went to here in the Armory, and I grabbed her stuff because I'm like, oh, my husband would like some of these, but I don't know which one.
Yeah, that's
her. I didn't know that was your mom. That's awesome.
You look alike now that you know.
Yeah, now that I know. When I see her again, I'm like, oh, yes, right.
Yeah.
This makes sense. That's awesome. That's nice to have family close by then. I imagine. Maybe not for everybody, but it seems like in this case.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So when you were growing up in the area and in high school, what were you most interested in? Like what kept you busy?
From 16 to throughout college, I was interested in naturopathic medicine and fashion. So I started a fashion design business at 17. Where I was sewing clothes and accessories, so hats, sweat outfits, dresses, accessories, purses, all kinds of different things. I did a couple fashion shows with my designs, and then I went to the Seattle Fashion Academy for a year, where I learned some sewing techniques and tricks. And then I was also in Pierce College, where I was studying science. Different like chemistry, biology, because I was going towards naturopathic medicine. So that's what I was into.
That's awesome. I didn't realize that. That you were part of the fashion world here. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I knew that there was a Seattle Fashion Academy. Mm-hmm. And it's still there, I imagine, right?
Yeah. So shout out to Nikita Pete because she went there too.
Oh, okay.
So I went there for 1 year and I had an online store. It was called MG Boutique.
Okay.
Where I was selling all my designs. And then, I had two fashion shows. And then that's how I got started with the markets because I wanted to create a space for me to sell my products and then also offer the opportunity for other entrepreneurs to do the same.
That's awesome. Very cool. So the program at Seattle Fashion Academy, Is it like an undergrad or is it a little bit different? Is it more like a program? Do you get a certificate or how does that work?
I think it's a private school.
Is it? Okay.
So the woman that owns it, she offers different types of courses. So like you can, you'd pay, it's not like a semester quarter type of thing, but you would pay for this 6-week program or whatever to learn how to do illustration. Or you would learn how to do different seams, or you would learn about fabrics, or you would learn how to drape. So you would have to pay for each course based off what you wanted to learn.
Oh, that's kind of cool. So you can kind of just pick and choose what most interests you or what will serve you the best.
Right. And
okay.
Based off of like what level you were at. So like if you were already somebody that knows how to do seams, then you go up to those other classes and work in those ones.
Yeah, you don't have to spend time doing the stuff that you already know.
Right.
Different than other college courses where you're like, well, I guess I'll have to sit through this so I can get my...
Yeah, where they make you start from zero to...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah, that's awesome. So did you do that straight out of high school or... Did you spend some time doing some other stuff before you started that?
I spent 2 years. So after high school, I went to Pierce College.
Okay, you did that first. Okay.
That's what I did first. And then I was like, hey, I really want to get into a business. So I just ended up getting my Associates of Science. And I told myself, I'm going to go back to finish naturopathic medicine. But I feel like that point in my life, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I kind of forced myself to jump into something because... quote unquote, I had to do it based off of my peers and my family. When they forced you to go to college and get a degree and things of that nature, I just picked something that called out to me, and naturopathic was what called out to me because I'm a naturopathic person. I go to natural remedies versus conventional medicine. So I was like, oh, I would love to do that. But then I realized I don't really want to be a doctor and have to be a doctor under certain rules. I would rather, like, they don't really allow us to say, hey, you can take this ginger and you can heal yourself. technically, like, the it's not FDA approved to use herbs and things of that nature. So there were so many rules that I didn't want to follow. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, I think I'm going to just, what I really wanted to do was have a business. And that's why I got into fashion. So I got my associates and then I went into the Seattle Fashion Academy. And I started to learn from YouTube and I was teaching myself how to sew and all these things because I was fixated on having a business that could help me have a financial stability so that I can go to school.
Mm.
Now, I'm not going back for naturopathic medicine, maybe later, but yeah, like I said, I think that was more of a point in my life where I just didn't know what I really wanted. So I just jumped into it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, that's what most people, I think, end up doing. And then it takes a lot of detours and reroutes to figure out the thing. And then even at like 40, 50, however old, you still could change what you do. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I don't think I didn't go straight into college myself either because as a musician, I was like, nah, I don't need it. Now I see the value of learning the things with music and everything. But at the time, I was like, oh, I just want to do this one thing and it doesn't involve college. So let me do it. And then I got bored. And so, like, all right, I'll go to college.
Yeah.
So, what kind of introduced you in and interested you in naturopath, the kind of more naturopath type route when you were interested in doing that?
I was interested in naturopathic medicine because I have a blood disorder called sickle cell disease. Sickle cell disease is a group of blood disorders that causes your blood cells to twist and bend out of regular shape. So, for example, people with normal blood, they have donut-shaped blood cells. People with sickle cell, they have a crescent moon blood cell or sickle-shaped blood cell. In class, in college, I was able to see what a sickle cell looks like under a microscope.
Uh-huh.
And they were just like all deformed. There were some that were shaped as a crescent moon. And then there was just some that were like just weird, like twisted and bended, like in the center. So like it would be twisted in the center and create two little dots on the ends. That's an example of like what our blood cells look like. But for what a sickle cell crisis is, it can come in different types of ways. So some of my crises are like this. I'll get pain in my arm where I can't use my arm, or in the leg where I can't use my leg. Sometimes I've gotten them in both my knees at one time where I can't walk. And it's like excruciating pain. It's disabling.
Mm.
I've had this since I was born. I started to research like natural ways to deal with my pain because I didn't like taking narcotics all the time.
Oh, is that what they gave you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's very strong narcotics. So I was using strong narcotics ever since I was a kid.
Wow.
And I didn't like that. I started to realize that I don't remember things. Like my reactions, like mentally, are kind of like delayed. So I started to look at the side effects of the narcotics. I'm like, oh, snap.
Yeah.
This could be why I am this way because I've been on this for 16 years nonstop, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, that's why I started to look into it and get into it. For me, my natural alternative methods to deal with my pain or to prevent pain, because that's what natural medicine is. It's a preventive care. It's also alternative from conventional medicine, but we focus on preventive care. So I changed my diet. I'm now vegetarian. And I noticed that when I stopped eating beef and pork 12 years ago, I had a different reaction. So then 6 years ago, I stopped eating chicken and turkey. Now I don't eat any meat at all.
Mm.
And I've had less flare-ups within the last 6 years. I used to get flare-ups 2-3 times a month.
Mm.
Now I only get flare-ups maybe like 4 or 5 times a year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and then also I used to catch pneumonia and bronchitis a lot at the same time. Because when you have sickle cell disease, you are immunocompromised.
Mm.
Your immune system is very weak. So, because it's like your body is like fighting itself, kind of, you know. You don't have the proper blood cells or the blood flow to keep you healthy. So, and you know, your spleen is what fights off infections. And if blood is not flowing properly to your spleen, then it causes more issues. When blood isn't flowing properly to other parts of your body, it causes issues. So like kidney disease is very common. A vascular necrosis is very common also within people with sickle cell disease. A vascular necrosis is when the blood doesn't circulate in a joint area and it causes the bone to decay.
Oh, wow.
Yes, so I have that in my shoulder because of sickle cell disease. It's literally on the shoulder ball.
Okay.
And you don't really know about these things until you go see a doctor because you're dealing with pain. But I found out that I had a vascular necrosis due to sickle cell just last year. But I dealt with it for a year in my shoulder, not knowing what was going on. And then I figured out, like, wow, the bone is about to fall off. Oh, it's not about to fall off, but it's falling off because it's decaying from the ballpoint. So eventually it's going to, what they call it, I forgot what it's called. It's basically like the shoulder just comes off the shoulder ball. So this part here is like a little ball that keeps these together. That ball in the center is what is decaying from this area. Wow. It's called a collapse.
Oh, okay.
They call it collapsing.
Wow. That seems like, I don't know, I've dealt with certain medical things with doctors as well. And it seems like that would be, I don't know, not to sit and blame doctors for things, but like, we should all get a list of resources and things to study up on and some homework on stuff whenever we're diagnosed with something or something. It's like this would be information that would be helpful to have moving forward. So not knowing about that and then wondering what this pain is, that seems scary. And then what else aren't they educating people on, you know? Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you caught that though. Maybe this is oversimplified, but is it that because your cells, your blood cells are shaped differently, they get like clogged up?
Yes.
And like, okay.
They stick to each other.
Okay.
That's what they call it because they're crescent. When they flow, so like when they're donuts, they just flow naturally past each other.
Okay.
They flow passively, they say. But when they're sickle, they get cooked onto each other, stick onto each other, preventing blood flow to going into a certain area.
Right. So like your shoulder is just not getting the blood flow and the oxygen that it needs to do the thing it's supposed to do normally.
Right. So then it caused a whole nother diagnosis. Usually like in other areas, it'll just cause a lot of pain. And sometimes it's uncontrollable. So the worst pain that I've ever had in a crisis or the worst episode crisis is like when I'm not able to control my like my motor skills due to the pain. So like I'll be in so much pain and I'm trying to walk and I literally am stuck or I have to use a cane or somebody has to like help me pick up my body to get out of the bed or to whatever just to do normal routines because it's very disabling. It can be. So I got into natural medicine because I just don't want to deal with the things like that, especially as an adult. Like when you go to work and stuff, you have to go to work to survive, right? So it used to prevent me from going to school, from going to work. So that's also why I got into having my own business too, because I'd rather not have to call my boss all the time and say, hey, I'm having an episode. And most of the time, people can't see your pain. So my last job that I had, my boss actually made fun of me. She didn't take me serious about my disorder. And since then, I was like, I'm never working for nobody again because people, they don't see your pain, so they don't know if you're in pain. They think you're lying or they just don't think it's real because it's not them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's frustrating. Yeah. When people can't see it, like you're not always carrying the cane that you need sometimes probably or this or that or the other thing. Oh, that's frustrating. That makes total sense though. Now you just tell yourself like, well, I'll get to this tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because you can't predict when something's going to come up, right? No. Or are there any cues that...
Sometimes. So as I've gotten older, I've learned what my cues are. But then sometimes I just wake up like, today I'm fine, but tomorrow I can wake up in pain and not be able to move my body without any cues, you know? And then you're like, what triggered it? And you're like, I don't know. I just had a regular day, you know? But there are a lot of factors that trigger it. So there's heat, there's cold. So when we're transitioning from fall to spring, mm-hmm. or spring to summer, or summer to winter.
So all the things?
All the things, pretty much.
Yeah.
And that's also why I have less episodes, is because I'm eating differently and I do different things for my body. But when I, before I went vegetarian and before I started to pay attention, I would have episodes every time. So every spring to summer, I would get pneumonia and bronchitis. And then that happened for 3 years in a row.
Oh, wow.
And then every summer to winter, I'd get pneumonia and bronchitis again. And that happened those same 3 years. So I was like, okay, something's not right. Like, and who wants to be sick in the summer?
Right.
Like, that's when we're supposed to be having fun.
Yeah. Is there particular herbs that you've found that help as well? Like, I know you said you transitioned to being vegetarian, but what other herbs have helped you?
So one herb that helps with, like, my immune system, because, like I said, I'm immunocompromised.
Yeah.
Whenever I catch the cold or, like, the flu, it's, like, the worst thing. It can cause a flare-up with sickle cell. So, like, I can get over having a fever and all these flu symptoms, and then that first day that I feel better, all of a sudden my knees are hurting. Like, it'll trigger, like, have a domino effect. I don't have that anymore. But the herb that helps with my immune system and, like, your lungs. And clearing those things out is called mullein, M-U-L-L-I-E-N. And then I make a blood circulation and cleanser tea blend at home. And it has alfalfa leaf, which is good for anemia and blood circulation. Hawthorn berries, which is good for circulation and blood flow. Motherwort, it eases menstruation and gives you iron. Nettle is a blood purifier, and burdock root is a blood cleanser. And then I also like to drink dandelion root and a mixture of it with other things. It kind of tastes like coffee, you know. But that's also good for cleaning your liver and for energy and things of that nature. Those are some of the herbs that I like to use.
I love that. It's amazing how much tea can do, and just the different herbs within that you can make tea out of. I have certain teas that I drink as well for condition that I have as well. It's just super interesting. It's like, why isn't this done more? Because you're using those things and vegetarian now, do you have to do any of the narcotics anymore? Were you able to transition from that?
So as I get older, I'm starting to realize that I'm not having as many flare-ups, but the flare-ups that I do get aren't nice. It's probably like, well, you haven't seen us in a year, so here you go, kick your ass now. So I haven't been to seeing the doctor in the last like 6-7 years, and I just started seeing him last year because of the vascular necrosis. And then I've noticed that, like, I just had a sickle cell flare up last month, and it wasn't that bad, but I did have to use narcotics to relax. It's like everything, when things are hurting, you clench up, and I start to hyperventilate, and then me not breathing is preventing more blood from flowing. So I did have to use narcotics one time, just recently, but I only use it if it's really bad and nothing else is working. So what I like to do first, if I sense a cue that I'm about to be in pain, my goal is to breathe and to relax myself. So I kind of just like stop. I'm like, oh snap, I'm about to have a crisis. So I pause whatever I'm doing and I close my eyes and I inhale and I breathe out of my mouth, like exhale out of my mouth, and calm myself down. And it's like a meditative state. So like, I don't want to think about anything besides focusing on where that pain is and exhaling the pain out. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. If that doesn't work, I'm turning on binaural beats and then breathing. If that doesn't work, I'm lighting some incense that are good for pain. There's an opium incense, because opium is, and it was actually a natural, it was in nature, and they use that to make opium's medicine. So I think it's like a flat floral herb, or
Okay. I think so. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I light those incense, and then I'm like, okay, breathing in that. If that doesn't work, I'm pulling out the crystals, and I'm laying the crystals on my body with the music and the incense going, and I go into a meditative state. Mm. There was one time where I was in a really bad crisis in my lower back, and when it gets in my lower back, I can't breathe, and then I can't move, and then I'm disabled. So I said, okay, I must turn on this music, light this incense, and I got this carnelian, which is good for blood circulation. I'm going to put it on my back, all the way down my legs. And I'm going to tell myself that I'm healing my body.
Mm.
And then I fell asleep and I woke up and I wasn't in pain.
Mm.
That was only one time I was able to heal myself with my hands and crystals. But I know that if I really tap into that, I can continue to do that. Luckily, I haven't needed to do that, but it's really just like meditating and focusing on where that spot, the pain is, so that I can exhale it out and get rid of it. Doctors who tell me it's not a mind over matter thing. And they, one time the doctor, she gave me a book called Mind Over Matter. And it was like written in like the 90s. And it's about these scientists doing all these tests on people with conventional medicine and how they wanted to like, it was pretty much trying to tell me that alternative medicine is not going to work for what I have going on. And I was like, all right, well, that's why I haven't seen you guys in 6 or 7 years. And I've been working on myself, you know, so.
Yeah, like they were trying to convince you to not go down that route at all.
Mm-hmm.
That seems very backwards.
Yeah. Well, the thing is like people with sickle cell disease, they die from the pain.
Oh.
The pain can be very painful and they can go into a state where they don't make it out. And there is like a certain age limit where people with sickle cell disease don't live past. It's a very serious disease. And what else is mind-blowing is that a lot of people don't know about sickle cell disease. And a lot of people of color don't know about sickle cell disease. But sickle cell disease is found in mostly people of color.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people that are white Americans that do have it. But that's because they have some African descent within their bloodline.
Okay. Interesting. So it seems to it's more prevalent in those that are of African descent.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I had learned that at some point. So that sounds familiar. So the awareness of it is a big deal, because if you don't know what's causing some pain that you're having and you're not boiling down to it to be able to treat it, do most people find that they are diagnosed with it when they're young like you were, or does it? Do you know if it can creep in later on in life kind of thing?
So some people don't find out that they have sickle cell until later on.
Oh, okay.
But it's usually, so I've been on TikTok and there was a woman who is, she's actually white. She's a white American. Mm-hmm. And she found out that she has sickle cell disease. But in her bloodline, she does have African descent.
Mm-hmm.
She never knew why. Whenever she would go on a plane, she would get really, really sick because that's another trigger. There's the weather. There's being at high altitude, so hiking, flying. I'm not supposed to fly on a plane for no more than 2 hours. I have to take delay so that I don't trigger a crisis.
Wow.
But she moved to New York, and New York is at a different elevation from where she was, and she was always sick.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I think she's in her mid-20s and just found out that she has sickle cell disease.
Wow.
For me, we found out at birth because my mother and father both had the trait.
Okay.
So it was an alarm when she was pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Something that they wanted to check out. And they had the trait, but they didn't have it. Is that correct? Okay.
But what we just found out is that people with the trait do have symptoms, just not as bad as people with the actual disease.
Oh, I see. Okay. And do you know, did your twin also have it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We both had it. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. The music that you mentioned that helps you, what was it called again?
There's binaural beats.
Yeah.
Binaural beats are like a frequency that kind of triggers a certain part of your brain for different things.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever tried them?
No, I don't know that I'm familiar with the term. I mean, I've heard that. What have I heard? The bowls.
The song bowls.
That connect with different parts of your
chakras.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine that maybe that's similar, but
in a sense, different? So chakra music is something that's tuned with your chakras, mm-hmm. your different chakras. Binaural beats trigger the brain. So it's a certain frequency. So like there's 532HZ. I think it's like hertz or something.
Mm-hmm.
A certain frequency. Mm-hmm. And then there's like 324. And then there's 986. There's different frequencies for different points of your brain mm-hmm. to help you with different things.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some that can help you sleep. There's some that helps with stomach aches, migraines. And then there's some that'll like help you with your mood. You know, like if you're in a depressing mood or if you're upset. I tend to turn on the pain relief ones if I'm in pain. Or I listen to like nature sounds. But there's a particular one where it's like an ancestral spiritual sound. There's drums, there's flutes, there's birds, and there's like a call like they're doing in the music.
Mm.
And that's the one that I tend to use if I'm doing like when I was laying the crystals on my body to help with my pain, that's the one that I tune into too.
Mm. That's so interesting. That's like a whole nother world to investigate. And that must have taken a long time, I imagine, to do the research for all these things to help you. Or did you have help in figuring these things out? Or was it all just kind of self-research?
It was self-research. Like mm-hmm. YouTube, reading books, I started to teach myself about energy work and, you know, that mind over matter mindset where mm-hmm. mind does matter mm-hmm. over matter, believing that it's all in my brain and that if I tell my body to do something with my mind, I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
If I tell my body, like, hey, you can push away this pain. Or if I close my eyes, my mind's telling me that, and I visualize that spot where that energy is, where the pain is, and I visualize it removing from myself when I'm in pain, then I can do that. Back to the mind over matter thing, you just mm-hmm. have to like really believe that.
Yeah, I've experienced that myself when I was doing a little more consistent meditation, not that much, just like a few minutes a day, and then you get like a certain just small pain somewhere, and then you just, once you focus on it, it relaxes, and mm-hmm. it's so interesting. Like, you would think, at least I would think, that focusing on it would make it worse or something, mm-hmm. but if you're focusing on it with the right energy and the right
intentions,
yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting. Yeah, I think there's a lot of power in our brains and our minds, much more than people give credit for.
Mm-hmm. Especially doctors.
Oh, yeah.
Because, so another, like going back to naturopathic medicine, is a form of holistic medicine where it's mind, body, and soul.
Mm-hmm.
And holistic doctors believe in treating all three
mm-hmm.
versus just one. And conventional doctors focus on, you know, curing the body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of times when we are, our emotions get stored in our body.
Right.
They cause pain. They cause disease. And that's something that I started to look into, was like, okay, so what within me is causing the pain for the sickle cell? And sometimes mm-hmm. I'll have sickle cell crisis when my spirit is trying to tell me something.
Mm-hmm.
So like there was a time period I was working this job and I knew that I should have been working there because I should have been focusing on growing my business, right? Spirit was like, hey, I'm tired.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be here no more. I'm not passionate about this no more. I want to do what's for me. But body's like, oh, girl, you got to pay the bills.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Spirit was like, okay, well, you want to play with me, sister? I was sick every week for three months in a row.
Oh.
Every week I would get a crisis. My boss was like, what's going on? You know, like, I'm like, I have sickle cell. That was the last time I had a job. Because when I told her about it, she was like, made a joke out of it.
Mm.
So that's just an example though. I was getting sick every week with different things. And I was at work one day. This was the first trigger. I was at work one day and both of my knees went out. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like I got stuck. I was cutting fabrics. I used to work at the cutting counter for fabrics and trims and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was sitting, I was like, something's happening to my body and my mind. And then all of a sudden, both of my knees just started like excruciating, extreme sharp pain in both my knees to where like I'm trying to walk and my knee is just like stiff. Like I can't bit my knee. So I stood there like this over the counter just crying for like 45 minutes. They didn't really understand what was going on because they, you know, they don't know what sickle cell is. And I'm like, I'm having an episode. Like, I just don't know what to say. Just please let me sit here for a little bit. I have to just sit down. And then I eventually had to limp all the way back and leave, but and drive myself home in that pain. But that was just, that's an example of my spirit controlling, you know, triggering my body just because of I wasn't passionate anymore. And then sometimes whenever I would be in a situation where I was angry, I would get sick with a fever really fast, like the next day. So like, say I felt betrayed and I was just so mad. I didn't talk to them. I just bottled that up inside. Next day I got a fever. And it reminds me of like those cartoons where like the cartoons, they turn red and they start to steam out of their head, you know? But yeah, some our emotions, you know, bottling them up and not addressing them or releasing them can cause disease. And holistic doctors still say, hey, well, what's going on at home? You know, like, are you mentally okay? Do you feel like harming yourself? Or what is actual triggering this heart pain? Are you heartbroken because a lover, you know, maybe from a past life that you never dealt with or from this life, you know? So that's what I really liked about naturopathic medicine is that they kind of focused on the whole of, you know, mind, body, and spirit versus just the body where they're just suppressing the symptom to cause another symptom.
Yeah, just kind of many times just putting a band-aid on a situation instead of it's detached from the entire picture, it seems. So when you were in, I'm going way back now, when you were in the Fashion Academy, did you say that that's what inspired you to start the Black Knight Market?
Not the Black Knight Market, no.
Oh, okay.
So before I had Black Knight Market, I had other markets.
Oh, okay.
My very first market was called the Hilltop Indoor Market. And this took place down up the street from here on 11th and MLK at the Tacoma Arts Community Center.
Oh, nice.
That one, I only had 10 vendors inside.
Okay.
7 vendors outside during the spring and the summer.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was like a little, just a little building. All of us had 6-foot tables and we sold our products and stuff. Yeah, having a fashion, having a boutique inspired me to be a vendor. So my first year, my dad, he was like, you gotta expose yourself. You know, you gotta go out there and expose yourself. I said, okay, I'm gonna go do it. So then I went to vendor events. I went to a few different ones and it was like a streak of vendor events. And I said, you know what? I'm gonna do my own vendor event. I know how to do this, right? All I gotta do is get a room and put people in here. Quickly learned that's not all that it is, right? As I've grown. But yeah, so that's why I was inspired. I wanted to sell my products. I wanted to give myself opportunity to just expose myself to people within my community with my products. Most people, they want to touch things, especially if it's clothing, right? So I was like, okay, I'll do that. And then I found the Tacoma Arts Community Center. I had my first fashion show there. And then I was like, all right, I'm going to start a market here. And it was actually, it was a good turnout for us, our first time. And then I was like, all right, I want to do this consistently, like every month or during the summer season or something. And once I said that to myself, I said, okay, I'm going to call the venue owner. She actually calls me the next day and is like, hey, Mari, we really love the market. Would you like to come do this every month? I said,
before you had a chance
I was like, yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to
do. That's
awesome. I was so excited. And then from there, I just kind of grew. So Hilltop Indoor Market, we did that for 3 years. I think 3 years on Hilltop. It was a small market, but we had themed events. So I was like, oh, if we have themes, then people, it'll bring more people because there are other markets here, right? So we used to have a health and wellness theme, where we had health and wellness vendors from vegan food to sea moss to herbal teas to crystals, meditation, massage therapists, all kinds of different things, right? That cater to health and wellness. And then we had the, a 420 friendly one where we had like CBD products or clothing. And there was this woman who used to knit things and she knit this big bong, like all kinds of fun stuff like that. And then there were artists and stuff who had like trippy 420 friendly art and stuff. That one was one of my favorite ones.
That sounds cool.
And then we had an art market. We had a fashion one before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's what got me into it, is having that business. And then once I started to be consistent with Hilltop Under Market, I was like, I don't even need to sew like that. Like, I have a business. Yeah. This is a business. I can turn this into a business.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of got tired of sewing for people, because it was like people wanted me to sew whatever they wanted. And I was like, well, I'm a designer. I want to do what I want to do, right?
Right.
But that wasn't really selling, because you have to cater to your target audience, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I also didn't even know who my target audience was.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what my brand stood for. I didn't have a brand identity with my products or with the entire presentation on social media and stuff like that nature. If I could go back and do what I know now, I feel like I would take off, you know? But I had to grow through that, you know, that milestone and say, hey, I'm going to put this down for a little bit, focus on this business and grow and expand this business. Because once this is good, I'm going to go back to selling, but I'm going to sell for myself. So like now I sew for my own clothes for me, and I don't really show people because I don't want people like, hey, can you do this for me? No, I can't yeah, right now.
Right
now I'm trying to really understand what I want to do with sewing. And I know now that I want to cater to a certain target audience. I know now that I want to make specific clothing and only that, because I want to cater to these specific people and only them, you know? And I spent all this money trying to try out all these different things. Instead of like mastering how to do a certain garment, I wanted to make everything. I was making quilts, beanies, purses with zippers and pockets. Like, it was crazy. I was making all kinds of stuff, bucket hats and stuff. And then it's like, okay, now you got all this fabric and it just doesn't make sense. You don't, what are we going to do with all this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now I give some of the old things that I have away, because I know that when I do start selling again, it's not going to be with the specific fabric. You know, it's only going to be in this specific fabric so that I can cater to these type of people.
I like that. Yeah, it seems like that's a lot of times the process, as far as like finding your path in a creative in a creative world, is just like, sometimes it's just trying all the things and getting that all out and then narrowing down once it's right. So that's awesome though. And it's very cool that you recognized that you needed to shift gears to like focus on this passion and this business, and then the sewing's in your future still, and whatever else is in your future,
right?
As well.
yeah
So the iteration, can you describe for those who may not know what the Black Knight Market is now, and kind of how you got to this spot with where it is now?
Okay. So, for me, I kind of got to go back. So, Hilltop Under Market, we did that for, like I said, I think from 2 to 3 years. After that, being on Hilltop, there was a season where we were supposed to do a holiday during the winter and the fall, and we couldn't because there was construction in front of our building, and it blocked off the entrance into our building. So, it was like, it was really slow for us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I was like, all right, so I guess I got to find us a new spot, right? I ended up getting this inside the Tacoma Mall.
Oh.
Yeah, and it was called Tacoma Holiday Market.
Oh, nice.
And we had like 27 to 30 vendors in there. And we were inside the mall in the food court area where the old Charlie's was. We had a spot in there, and then it went okay.
Yeah.
With anything new within the city that's for community, it's, you have to build up to it, you know? Unless you have really hardcore marketing and advertising, then you have to build it up, like the awareness that we're there.
Mm-hmm.
So our very first one was popping. It was so good that we had investors. They didn't even know that we were in the mall, but they just came in, and then they bought out like 4-5 vendor tables.
Oh, really?
Like everything on their table. I was like, what? Wow. And it was awesome. It was awesome.
Amazing.
So that was our first one. And then our last two were really good too.
Oh, awesome.
So from there, I was like, okay, so now that I know that my business is like events and markets and vendor coordination and recruitment and stuff, what am I going to do next? So I was like, okay, I really want to do something for my community, for the Black community, and I don't know what it is yet, but I want to do it. And I prayed on it, and I asked my ancestors to show me what I should do in a dream. I went to sleep, and I saw a Black Night Market. I seen us having vendors, I seen performers, I seen Black and brown people in chairs, eating, laughing, dancing. I seen joy. I seen them creating in that space. And it was amazing. It was an amazing feeling. I woke up, I was like, oh, I gotta do this. I gotta do this. And then I started to journal, because I used to journal a lot. And I was journaling, and I was like, what should I call it, though? And then all these names came to me. And I was like, oh, Black Night Market. That's hard. That's hard. So, yeah, that's how I got into Black Night Market. The first one that we did was at Edison Square. I was already looking for venues to do other events. So I was like, ooh, that one would be cool because it has a stage. Mm-hmm. And it has space for vendors and workshops and a beer, like alcohol bar. Mm-hmm. It has space for a bar and for food trucks. So I'm like, all right, yep, let's do it. Edison Square was amazing. It was it was dope. Our first one, we had two fashion shows and like six performers, music performers. Awesome. And that was dope. And we had 42 vendors. So growing from that 17 to that 42 was awesome.
Yeah.
And that was just last year. That was, we started April 29th.
Wow.
And we were supposed to have one on December, but a snowstorm came, so that one had to get canceled. That one got pushed to February, Black History Month of this year.
Okay.
That was an amazing one. And then our next one was, like, it's crazy how it's, like, it's only been a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's only been a year.
Yeah.
A year and a half. So, like,
right.
What the fuck?
Wild. I know.
So, after that February one, our next one was at the Tacoma Armory, and that one was awesome. That one, I cried. Mm-hmm. After seeing that, because when you walked into... Did you come to the event?
Yeah, I think I was at that one.
Okay.
Was that the...
April 1st.
And you had the fashion show and the musicians in the smaller room. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I believe I was there. Yes.
Okay. So...
Oh, gosh. It seems like so much not as long ago
I
as
know,
it is.
Right? when you walked into the armory part where the vendors were, it was like a big expo, business expo, just different businesses, right? And compared to the other room, the Roosevelt room, where there were tables, there was the wine and beer, and then there was a saxophonist, a DJ, poetry hour. That room was like more mellow.
Mm-hmm.
But when you walked to this expo, it's like, oh my gosh, it was like more energy in there, right? It was two different experiences.
Yes.
That experience is what I had my dream of. I was telling that other Allison, I was like, Allison, everything that happened, I seen it before. This is deja vu for me. I had a dream of this. This is exactly what Black Night Market is supposed to be, supposed to feel like and like look like from the colors of the, because it was like a bluish tint light in there.
Right.
That's what everything was going on in my dream. There was a bluish light. It wasn't like everything from what it was. It wasn't like everything in my dream was everything that was in reality. No, but there were different things. So like the light in my dream was blue. There were a bunch of vendors. There was a stage with people dancing, and there was a like a headlight on just them. And there was the projector, but my logo wasn't there. Like it was just kind of like a blur on there. But it was just like everything I knew that happened, I felt it in that dream. Or I experienced it with different symbols from the dream.
That's amazing. Wow. What a moment. Of course you cried after that.
Yeah. I was a big baby. I was like, oh my God.
I would have been too.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It was I really loved the market. I was trying to think if there was another one that you had here, but was that the only one at the armory?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that was definitely the one I was here. And it had such a beautiful feel to it. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Like the energy in each of the rooms was totally different. Mm-hmm. And it was so nice to have a room to just go chill for a second, be quiet, kind of get away from the hustle and bustle. And then you go back in and you can still like in a really good way, like breathe walk around without like shimmying through in a really nice way. Cause I've been to some markets or some events where you're just like feeling like a sardine or something. You're like, this isn't, cause you can't spend time shopping then. You're just kind of like trying to go quickly through all the booths cause you don't want to get in the way, or like I wouldn't want to get in the way, or like you just are stuck. You don't have time to look at things. So it was just a really nice combination of all of that. Cause you have time to chat with the vendors and pick out things that you liked, and but it was still like a full room and really, really great energy. I really loved it. So yeah, do you have plans to be back in the armory or somewhere similar? I know you've been out in the field by the American Car Museum. Is that what it's called? The Car Museum. But do you have plans to get back in the armory or somewhere similar?
Right now I'm looking for a new home, and that's been a challenge.
Okay.
Because some spaces that are bigger, they don't want to accommodate us in certain ways. Like, some of them will say, well, you can't have food vendors. And it's like, well, we don't have an event without food. It's kind of weird, you know? Mm-hmm. Or if we do have outside food, we have to pay more. Like, it's just crazy things that we've been experiencing. And not every place will, like, have a stage and space for seating.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, it's hard to find the combination, the perfect combo of all the things.
Of everything.
Yeah.
People that want to come to this event, they loved Tacoma Armory event. And it was a Saturday, and usually we're on Fridays, you know. So it works a lot better for everyone on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. So we're thinking about it, and I got to do some more research about a new home. But I'm looking for a new home because it's been a challenge. It's been a challenge. We've also been facing some, I don't want to say like racism, but like there are organizations that kind of treat me differently once they figure out what our event is about.
Oh, really?
Yes. So, and also once they meet me in person, they're kind of like, well, you're young, so you're probably not really paying attention to this contract, you know?
If they're not taking you seriously.
Yeah, they don't take me serious. So I've been having issues with the logistics of B&M with these other corporations that look at me weird because I'm a young black woman who's rooting for everybody black. You know, so I don't know.
That's frustrating.
So I'm just in this position now where it's like, okay, we gotta figure out what we gotta do.
Yeah. Well, hopefully some things start to get clear. People start to step up a bit and help out, because it's such a great event. I loved it. But what are you most excited for coming up?
I'm excited for everything, honestly. I'm excited to see where I go next and how I do it and what I do. And I'm excited to just feel like I know what I want to do and go for it and go through that process of going towards it. That makes me excited.
Wonderful. Where's the best place for folks to find you or the Black Knight Market and support or whatever else you want people to find you or support?
Okay, so you can find Black Knight Market at blacknightmarket.com. That's our website. On the website, if anyone's interested in being a vendor, you can click sign up. If anyone is interested in our events, you can click RSVP. Or you can click 2023 events so you can see where we're going to be at our new locations. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Black Knight Market. We are also on TikTok at Black Knight Market 253 and Threads, Instagram Threads.
Oh, yeah.
That's at Black Knight Market as well. It's kind of like Twitter, but hey, you know. Awesome. And then if you want to find me, my personal pages on Instagram is it's MariG_. So ITSMARIG_.
Thanks for sharing. And I think I saw at one point you have options for sponsors as well for the Black Knight Market. So if people go to the website, blacknightmarket.com, they're interested in sponsoring and supporting, they could find info there. Is that right?
Yeah, they can click sponsors. They can click about me, contact us. Sweet. They can do all the good things on blacknightmarket.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you for joining me on Take Notice. This has been an awesome conversation. I appreciate you sharing your story and all your thoughts and the things, the exciting things that are coming up.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for Take Notice, Amplifying Black Stories. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to share it with someone you know. Connect with us on social media. We would love to hear from you. We are at Take Notice Podcast. You can also find us at takenoticepodcast.org. Reviews help us reach more listeners, so please rate and review on your favorite podcast app. Take Notice, Amplifying Black Stories is produced, hosted, and edited by Allison Preisinger Higgins. Music by Version Big 5 featuring Darius Higgins. Thank you for being with us, and thank you for taking notice.